Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton and Mark Halleck, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Welcome back to Revitalize and Replant. I say welcome back because we assume that you come back, you know, every once in a while.
It may be your first time.
Maybe your first timers. Yeah. Maybe everyone is a first timer.
We want to welcome first time guests. If you're here, would you please stand?
Stand, yeah. We have a little ribbon for you.
We want to put a ribbon on you. And we have a little gift bag at the back of a coffee mug you'll never use.
Yes, a coffee mug. By the way, I give coffee mugs away to everybody. I actually did this. I bought them. They were like, I don't know, a buck and a half a piece. And I bought a bunch of them and I had them printed up for Christmas. It said, go away. People tell me they still drink out of here. All right. It was a few weeks ago. I was at Missouri Baptist, had their conference, Resound, at Jeff City, which is, you know, kind of like what we do with Revitalize and Replant. And guess who the speaker was? Chuck Lawless.
Chuck.
Really?
Old Chuck.
We do so many of Chuck Lawless's articles.
I've never met him.
You would know him on the street.
I want to meet
Even
him.
After you met him, you wouldn't know him on the street.
He's a hero I've never met.
I'll tell you what, he's a brilliant writer, right? Yeah. And so I went up after the conference and I said, hey, Mark Clifton and Mark Halleck, you know, we've taken your name in vain often in the podcast. And he looked at me like, who are you?
Yeah.
And I said, I'm Kyle Bierman. he thanked us was grateful that we were able to use his material.
Well, we want to get his material out there.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Now, he's obviously connected to Southeastern Seminary, and he's a treasure to Southern Baptist and to pastors, and he loves pastors.
Amen.
And if Lawless isn't one of those guys you go to on a regular basis, read his blogs and all, you're missing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you like this podcast, and a lot of you do, apparently, you'll love Lawless's blogs because we use them a lot.
Yep.
And we're going to use one today, right? Yep.
Exactly, we are. And by the way, you mentioned that. Maybe that we can put a link to his blog, too. I guess it's legal to do that,
sure.
Is it?
Yeah, we always do.
Whether it's legal or not.
That's right.
So today, we're going to talk about something that every pastor should be, if they're not dealing with this, should be dealing with this. Some of you are dealing with this. And Dr. Lawless has written an article called 12 Ways to Confront Someone in Sin. I don't know that we'll get to all 12 here in a 20-minute podcast, but we can talk about some of these, and because it is so critical, I believe, as a shepherd, that you confront the wayward sheep, right? Mm.
Well, we don't do a very good job of that in our Southern Baptist life. I've always said, and it's easy for me to say it because I'm not serving as a pastor right now, there isn't any problem in your church that couldn't be solved with biblical, redemptive, restorative church discipline. But we don't know how to do that, or we don't have the consensus of the church to do that. If you don't have the consensus of your church, you can't affect church discipline. But so what we do is we just tend to ignore the sin and hope that it'll go away or take care of itself or the person will change.
Somebody else will deal with it.
Somebody else will deal with it.
Or we browbeat it from the pulpit.
Or we browbeat it from the pulpit. But if you got a church member, you got a church leader, you got a deacon, you got that's really habitually living in a state of sinful disobedience in some way. Let's just call it. Let's say you got a deacon in your church who constantly belittles his wife in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And everybody just kind of comes to accept it, and she's kind of come to accept it. But it's really, that's a habitual sin.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to get mixed up in that, or do you just want to, it's been that way, he's been doing that for decades, and, you know, you got enough on your plate?
Yeah, just let it be.
Just let it be. Yeah. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you confront people who have some sort of habitual sin in your congregation? And again, one of the main things sometimes we do is we just don't confront them.
Yeah.
Some pastors, I mean, none of us like confrontation.
Yeah.
So go for it, Halleck. What's he saying?
Okay,
number one?
So number one is biblically. The scriptures give us guidance in confronting others, right? And ignoring the word is never a wise move. So when we confront someone, we want to be biblical. Obviously, we think of Matthew 18 and going to that brother, you know.
Yeah, first. Yep.
First with by yourself, depending on how they respond, to bring someone else with you, and then to bring it to the church. But we want to be, this is biblical, okay? This is, God has given us instruction, and it's for the sake of seeing redemption and seeing reconciliation and helping. It's a loving thing to do. It's not loving as a parent to never discipline your kids.
And we can't say that we really value the Scripture and we believe in the fidelity of Scripture and we're a church that preaches and loves the Bible if we ignore sin.
Right.
Because the Bible does not. The Bible makes it clear. The New Testament.
Say that again. That's a great.
Yeah, we can't say that we are a church that loves the Bible, preaches the Bible, we'll take a stand for the Bible, we'll die for the Bible, we believe it from Genesis to the map in the back. You can't say that and then not take a stand against sin.
That's right.
The New Testament's very clear that we are in covenant relationship with one another in a local church in order to equip one another and to be hold each other accountable.
That's right.
And you just look at Paul. When Paul's writing the book of Philippians, a joyful book, a happy, I mean, that's what we talk about. We talk about Philippians, right? It's all joy, right?
Yep.
Except near the end, where he calls out two ladies by name.
That's right.
And I would call their names, but I can't pronounce them. And I don't think anybody else can either. We all just make it up. But there are two ladies near the end of that book where he, you know, you can imagine they're all sitting around and Paul's reading this letter. No, it's just great joy and, you know, you can do all things through Christ and don't worry about anything, pray about everything and tell God your needs.
Sure.
And don't forget to thank him for his answers. By the way, that's the Living Bible.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I memorized that in high school, Philippians 4:10 in the Living Bible. But then he says, okay, now you two ladies, and he names them my name. Basically, this is another, this is my own interpretation, my paraphrase. These two ladies, you two ladies, you're arguing and fussing and it's a problem and you got to stop it. Now, again, it's not a theological issue, or Paul would have taken a stand on it. It's not like one of them was sinning and teaching false doctrine. He would have said that. He doesn't take a stand on either one of them. They're just fussing. And he says, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And then he says, the reason you can't do that is because you are important, and you've been good partners with me. And then he says to the church, and church, you make sure they don't do that. Because unity matters. Okay, Paul doesn't ignore a sin.
That's right.
And again, it's not a blatant sin. It's not there's something theologically they're doing wrong, because he'll call that out.
Yeah.
It's just these two people are arguing. And he's just saying, you can't do that.
It needs to be addressed.
It needs to be addressed. And we don't address it. Yeah. I understand why we don't. But biblically, we must.
Yes, that's
right. That's
what
he's talking about.
So biblically, we address it biblically. Number two, and this is really important, we address it prayerfully. Prayerfully. We need God's help and guidance whenever we're speaking in someone else's life. I mean, this is why, you know, I think of James, who says, be slow to speak, right? And quick to listen. I think if we try to confront someone in their sin and we have not prayed about that, if we're not walking into that conversation prayerfully, dependent on the Spirit, man, we can do a lot of damage.
We can. We can confront them in our flesh.
That's right. And that's an ugly thing every
time.
I mean,
sometimes we can confront them because their sin is impacting on our ministry, and we don't like that. It makes us look bad as a pastor, and we can couch it in other terms, but if we don't come to them with a prayerful heart, you know, I've been privileged to spend so much time with Richard Blackaby in the last 5 or 6 years, and before that, I did spend some time with Henry. We were neighbors together in Atlanta and worked together at the Home Mission Board, but I certainly gotten to know Richard a lot better and a lot closer, and Richard constantly tells me people would come up to his dad and we'd begin a conversation with him, and his dad would immediately sometimes call out an obvious fault in this person's life just from what he said, an obvious sin. Brother, you shouldn't be thinking that, or that's not the way to approach this. And sometimes it would be a life changing experience for the person who heard it. And Richard knows this because people come to Richard all the time, and he'll tell you this: I had one conversation with your dad. He really exposed something in my life, and it's never been the same since. So, Richard, why did that happen? And it's because Henry spent so much time in prayer and was so intimate with Christ that when someone came up, he was really, truly, I'm really speaking, I think, in that mindset. And look at how much little time we spend in prayer.
Yeah.
So a lot of what we do is really just in our flesh. In our flesh. And I, again, not just to sing his praises, but back years ago, he and I were speaking at a conference together, Henry and I, and we were sharing the same condo in California, Colorado, out here somewhere in Park City or someplace. So 4:30 in the morning, I hear somebody in the kitchen, and I figure, well, he's in there getting coffee or whatever, and I went back to sleep. The next morning, 4:30 in the morning, so I get up, and he's up and he's dressed. He's sitting at the kitchen table, and he's got his Bible. So from 4:30, I don't know, 6 maybe, Richard
prayer in the
Henry
Word.
Blackaby wrote Experiencing God. Yeah. Wrote a Bible. Wrote a study Bible. And what do I do? My lazy keister goes back to bed. I mean, you know.
Again,
when you spend that much time with the Lord, you can speak into things that you can't speak into if you're not doing that.
Part of the prayer aspect of it is motivation too, right? I mean, if you're motivated for the wrong reasons, you know, then you really mess things up. But in prayer,
that's right.
It seems like God can motivate you.
Yeah, that's true.
And timing, give you the right timing for
something
like that.
That's so good, Dan. Yeah, that's both of those.
All right. So so then he mentions this, that you approach somebody and approach their sin, confront their sin relationally.
Yeah.
That's critical, and it's certainly part of what we talk about here.
Well, you in some ways, you know, I mean, you've got to earn the right to speak hard truth into someone's life. You know?
That is so true.
And I think some of us like the idea of speaking hard truth, but we don't have the relational connection that some, the goal, and let's be honest, the goal should be that the individual on the other side will receive what we say and be changed by that, right? Like what you just said about Henry. And the only way that's going to happen, really, typically, is if they know we love them, we've established relationship, friendship. It's why we always say in this podcast, building trust with God's people is priority number one as a pastor. There's got to be a relational aspect to this. Otherwise, I mean, listen, some dude comes up to you, and you and I both have experienced this, you know, or tries to call us out on something and confronts us, and I'm like, dude, you don't even know who I am.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so
it's relational.
But the relation is not based on the fact that I want to confront this sin. Correct? It's not, you're not building a relationship so that you can
No, that's right. It flows out of that relationship
and
with
so
trust.
If you're a pastor who naturally doesn't relate well to your people, hibernates away from them, doesn't engage in their life, isn't really an active shepherd, you're going to have a much harder time confronting sin.
Totally.
But if you're a pastor who goes hunting with these guys and golfing with these guys and you hang out with these men and you get to know them well and you spend time with your church members, they're going to hear you much differently when you say, "Hey, brother," and that's the next thing we're going to talk about.
Right.
Not just relationally out of your relationship you have with him,
personally. Keep going.
Yeah, don't text them.
Yeah,
and don't.
He says using our voice is important when confronting someone.
Yes.
An in-person meeting
or
phone call is better than a text or an email.
Yeah,
that is for
text
sure.
Or an email. They don't know what your tone is. They can't see your eyes. They don't see your expression. They don't know how much you care for them. And don't do it in a text or an email.
I got a great, great story on this.
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay. My dad pastored, and the last pastorate that he had was a little church in Virginia. New Corinth Baptist Church. I don't know what New Corinth means, but
Old Corinth went away.
So New Corinth Baptist Church in Kent, Virginia. New Kent, Virginia. And he would go hunting with his guys all the time. He built relationships with these guys. He loved these people in this church all the time. It was a church that was basically dead. But they called him and he went. He just felt like that's where the Lord wanted him. And that mission heart that he had really came to life there. And he built relationships with these guys and went hunting with them. He was there for a few years. At his funeral, the church asked if he would accept a burial plot there at their little church, and he had told them, he would. And so we had the service there, and then they had the meal afterwards. And so I met with the people there. I had preached the funeral, and I met with these people afterwards. And I can't tell you the number of stories I heard from people who told me over and over and over again, you know, your dad talked to me, and I learned so much about my life was so this, my life was so that, my family was broken and everything. But your dad told us, talked to us, and we realized that, you know, we needed to change. And I said, how did that happen? Did he just come over and talk to you? And he said, oh, no. He said, we went hunting all the time. And he said that was the whole and one of them started laughing and he said, you know, we went hunting and he never shot a deer. He went hunting and my dad was blind as a bat, you know. I know he never shot a deer. He'd go with him. He had his gun and he'd go with him and everything. I know, and he never shot a deer.
Wow, is that right?
And but these guys remembered the relationship that he built. And he had poured himself into their world. You know,
that's so good, brother.
He didn't expect them to come into his world.
I love that.
I do too, man.
Well, and that leads to number five, is humbly, right? Were it not for the grace of God, all of us could be caught in the enemy's web.
Well, yes.
You know? And so we don't approach someone in sin with arrogance or as though we're above this.
Right. And they can tell from your attitude
if
you're coming out of humility.
Totally.
Or not. At the same time, whether it's confronting sin or helping someone work through a loss of a death of a loved one or a diagnosis of a disease or a financial crisis or confronting sin, you want to do it humbly, but you don't want to make it about you.
Mm.
So don't say to them, well, let me tell you one time I did this, and let me tell you how I handled my sin. Because now you've shifted the – or don't say, man, I know my mother died of cancer too, and let me tell you – don't do that. You think you're helping, but you're just taking, you're basically saying, I don't want to talk about you, I want to talk about me.
Yeah, don't make it about you.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but when you come humbly, doesn't mean you got to, it means you just come with this humble attitude that, look, I realize this could be any, it could be me, and we're all possibly, Satan comes to all of us, so humbly. Number six, prudently.
Mm.
And again, this is so important. What do you mean by prudently? Do you really know the truth of what's going on? Do you really know the sin that's taking place? Now, the one we started this podcast with, where you might have a deacon who really belittles his wife in public and doesn't speak well to her, well, you know the facts because you've heard them.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's other people have said, you know, he's doing this or she's doing that. And you got to be prudent and make sure you know what's really happening and determine the truth. And ask all kinds of questions before you make any accusations.
Dude, that is so important.
Because if you make an accusation it ain't right, you have dug yourself into a relationship hole you'll probably never get out of.
That's right.
Wow.
So you've got to make sure. And you just can't take someone's word for it or some gossip or innuendo. And people love to do that, man.
Dude, totally.
So,
which brings me to a point, and it's something that Lawless says here, and I really kind of struggled with this when I saw it. And he said, do it quickly.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking, well, wait, you don't want to do it too quickly, obviously.
So, but I think he means don't drag this out.
Yeah,
and if you don't do it quickly, you might not do it at all.
Because he says this. He goes, that is not to say we should do it hasty. Should be hasty, but instead a call to confront sooner rather than later. The longer a person is in sin, the harder it is to break the pattern.
Yeah,
and I think that's right. And it goes back to what you said at the beginning. Most of us. We avoid it altogether.
Oh, sure.
And it can be under the guise of, well, I'm just still praying about this.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think through my, and it's like, dude, you're delaying because you don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
But I think, I do think we don't want to be hasty, but we also can't let it go because other people may be affected more than we realize. You've got to address it.
Right.
Soon.
Right.
Okay. Number eight, clearly, this is important too. And I think this goes with what you just said. Confrontation is not the time to beat around the bush.
No, this is why I'm here.
Yeah, you got to be clear.
Again, I've talked to you a few times about my former boss, Peck Lindsay, when I was a state missions director in Kansas, Nebraska in my 30s, and I was a hard kid to work with. And he would be clear. He would, again, come in, close the door in my office, sit on my desk, and say, Marco, you want to work here? And well, then this is, let me be clear about this.
Yeah.
And you've been doing some things. You haven't been returning your calls. And he said, I got a list of them here. And he said, "You, this can't happen again. And I need you to keep a call log for a week. Everybody who calls you, when you call them back. Are you good with that? Yes, sir. All right. And he left. I mean, be clear about it. He didn't come in and, just try to chit-chat and beat around the bush. Hey, you ought to do a better job. You're not doing this
Did
right.
Did you feel loved by him?
Yes. Immensely.
See, and that's probably why his words have so much weight.
Immensely.
Yes.
What did he do to build a relationship?
He spent time with me outside of work. I played tennis in high school for about 2.5 hours, and he loved tennis. So we would play a little bit of tennis back then.
Yeah.
And we would go on. He would take me. I got to go to wherever. I got to go to Omaha. Why don't you get in the car and go with me?
Mm.
And he just spent time with me.
Yeah, that's good.
And then there were a couple of times. Hurst, when I really stepped in it and I really got myself in a bind with some things and he had my back and he cared for me and I knew it. And man, when you know somebody cares for you and has your back and loves you,
it's huge.
They can be direct with you.
Yep.
And I knew he was doing it for my best. And I've said this many times, I would not be here in this role today if he hadn't straightened me out, frankly.
Mm.
My dad couldn't straighten me out. And, he tried. Your dad couldn't straighten you out. He tried. But certainly, pecked in. So that's what I'm saying. But yeah, you have to do it in that regard, and you do it clearly and directly.
Clearly,
you don't beat around the bush. You don't try to talk in sort of side language because you don't want to confront it.
Water it down. Yeah,
dude. Listen, we've been talking for quite a while here about things in our church and being husbands and wives, and man, I love you, bro, but I can't help but say I've heard you speak to your wife in some pretty harsh tones. Yeah. And man, tell me why you think that's okay. Because I really am concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned for your marriage. I'm concerned for your testimony.
Yep.
I'm concerned what it says to other young men in our church who hear you do that. So I really need to hear from you at this point. I mean, just cut right to it. And he'll probably become defensive and say it's none of my business and she doesn't mind, so why should you mind and all that kind of stuff. Be ready for that.
But the motivation, and this is the next point that Chuck brings up, and that is that it's got to be done redemptively.
Yes.
We're in the active work of redemption.
Yes. Yep.
We want to make your marriage better. We want to make you happier. Yep. We want you to be what Christ wants you to be.
Well, this reminds me of, we've all experienced this, I'm sure. I had to confront a sweet older man years ago who everybody loved, but he would use humor that was funny in a previous generation, if you follow me.
Oh, I know what you're talking
about.
But
was very out of date and inappropriate, and he didn't know it. And so we'd be at potluck, and he would drop stuff all the time. And then we would start getting new people, see, who didn't know his heart.
Oh.
And I remember a couple coming up to me and say, do you know how offensive his time? And I remember having to get with him over coffee. I still remember it. And I'm just this young guy. And I love you so much. But I've got to be honest with you. You know, some of the ways you're using humor kind of rough. And here's the thing. It was hard. The hard part of confronting him was I loved him so much.
Right.
And I didn't want him to be hurt.
Right.
Because he didn't mean anything by it.
Yeah, I know.
But you know what? I had to do it, and he was teachable, and he apologized, and he changed. But the redemption, that's the redemption piece of that. It's like, man, I love you too much, honestly, to not talk with you about this.
Yeah. And now, the flip side of that is, and I have done the very same thing, same approach, humbly, in love, redemptively, and they left.
And they leave.
That's they right. do sometimes.
Yeah. Yep.
You got to be ready for that.
That does happen.
Yep. So.
It may happen. And this little scenario we're talking about, that deacon may tell you it's none of your business.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
She ain't got a problem with it. Why you got a problem? They stay out of my life. I bet you're not so good with your wife either. I've heard you say things to her you shouldn't say. No, I'm serious. You got to be ready for all of that.
It's true. It's true.
I mean,
that's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
we'll run out of time here, but I do want to real quickly address these. Let's address number 10 and 11 together, because he says sorrowfully, but he also says lovingly.
Yeah.
You know, I that certainly needs to be a motivation right?
Yeah, grieving. I mean, if you got to confront this guy about what he's doing, he needs to see that this isn't something you're happy about. It's not something you enjoy, and you're doing it out of love for him and out of sense of sorrow that you have to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you don't enjoy this. It's not what you live for. No. You're not some drill sergeant who caught somebody not making his bed correctly and you get to work him over for it. You know, you're not like that. You're a loving shepherd and you hate to do this.
But what if you're a guy who's not sorrowful? What would you say to a pastor who is not what you just described?
Get another job.
Yeah.
Don't be a pastor. Because you can abuse that power I hate to say it, but in my 40-some years of ministry, I've come across pastors who are not sorrowful. They sort of relish confronting sin. Makes them feel good. Makes them feel powerful.
Powerful.
Makes them feel judgmental. Mm. Man, run from that kind of pastor as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. You want a pastor that he has to confront you in sin, it breaks his heart.
Yeah. Mm.
And he's sorrowful, and he loves you, and he would rather do anything else than see you go through this.
Mm-hmm.
And rather do anything else than have to have this conversation with you. But because he loves you, he's going to. That's totally different than some guy who seems to get his kicks out of it.
That's right. Yep.
And if you get your kicks out of it, dude, go get another job.
Exactly.
First of all, make sure you're saved.
Yeah.
And then secondly, see if you should be in ministry. Yeah. And thirdly, get some help, because you should not enjoy this.
No.
Confronting sin is not something you should feel empowered by.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, that kind of wraps up the 12th point, which is mutually.
Mm.
You know, and when I saw that, I went, mutually? What does it mean by that? But let me quote what Chuck says. He says, the solution is include yourself in the solution, and I want to walk with you toward victory over this struggle.
Mm. Yeah.
In other words, not just do as I say, not as, you know, or not, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But rather, how can I...
I'm with you.
Yeah. How can we grow through this?
And just say, hey, bro, you know, this thing with talking to your wife the way you do, man, I want to help you become, I'm going to walk with you with this and be with you. I'm not going to abandon you. And maybe you and I can keep meeting every week. We can talk about how it's going, how it's working. And maybe I can even give you some ideas on some things to do and some triggers that if you feel like spouting off, maybe that's a trigger. Man, I want to help you.
Yes.
Will you let me do that?
I'm on your side.
Will you let me help you?
Yep.
And it's not like he's going to say, no, I'm not going to let you help me.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I would love to do that. You're not just telling him what he's doing and walking away.
That's right.
You're going to partner with him, which is another reason we don't do it. We don't want to spend the time and the energy. And it's easier just to let it go and say, well, that's the way he's been for 30 years. We're not going to change him now and move on to something else.
I wish we had more time to talk about this, but we don't.
No, we don't.
And so we're going to wrap this up. But those points are there. Mm-hmm. We would encourage you to get a hold of Chuck Lawless' blogs and read his blogs because they'll stimulate your thinking
and
give you some ideas. Thank you to the North American Mission Board for making it possible for us to do this a couple of times a week, every week. We're grateful to them. Thanks, by the way, Halleck, to Calvary Inglewood for hosting us and making this possible. And if we're probably going to have to move out of here because
Kyle stood up
half the things off the wall.
He knocked half the things down off the wall.
A cramp
in your hamstring.
Kyle, there's something we need to talk to you about.
That's right.
We'll be back.
It's a sin we have to confront with Kyle.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.